Doris. Then I thought about Donald and Helga. Fool me once, shame on you, I says to no one at all, as I sat there with my feet dangling so close over the incomers that they sometimes got splattered with curds of foam. Fool me twice, shame on me. Except she never really fooled me. Her eyes never fooled me. I remembered waking up to the fact, one day in the late 60s this must have been, that I had never seen him, not even once, since I'd seen the hunky taking him back to the mainland that July day in 1961. And that so distressed me that I broke a long-standing rule of mine not to talk about him at all, ever, unless Vera spoke of him first. "How are the kids doing, Vera?" I asked her. The words jumped out of my mouth before I knew they were coming. With God's my witness, that's just what they did. "How are they really doing?" I remember she was sitting in the parlor at the time, knitting in the chair by the bow windows, and when I asked her that, she stopped what she was doing and looked up at me. The sun was strong that day. It struck across her face in a bright, hard stripe, and there was something so scary about the way she looked that for a second or two I came close to screaming. It wasn't until the urge had passed that I realized it was her eyes. They were deep-set eyes, black circles in that stripe of sun where everything else was bright. They were like his eyes when he looked up at me from the bottom of the well, like little black stones or lumps of coal pushed into white dough. For that second or two, it was like seeing a ghost. Then she moved her head a little, and it was just Vera again, sitting there looking like she'd had too much to drink the night before. It wouldn't have been the first time if she had. "I don't really know, Dolores," she said. "We are estranged." That was all she said, and it was all she needed to say. All the stories she told me about their lives, made-up stories I know now, didn't say as much as those three words, "We are estranged." A lot of the time I spent today down by Simmons Dock, I spent thinking about what an awful word that is. Estranged. Just the sound of it makes me shiver. I sat there and picked over those old bones one last time, and then I put them aside and got up from where I'd spent most of the day. I decided that I didn't much care what you or anyone else believed. It's all over, you see. For Joe, for Vera, for Michael Donovan, for Donald and Helga. And for Dolores Claiborne, too, one way or another. All the bridges between that time and this one have been burned. Time's a reach, too, you know, just like the one that lies between the islands and the mainland. But the only ferry that can cross it is memory, and that's like a ghost ship. If you want it to disappear, after a while it will. But all that aside, it's still funny how things turned out, ain't it? I remember what went through my mind as I got up and turned back to them rickety stairs. The same thing that went through it when Joe snaked his arm out of the well and almost pulled me in with him. I have digged a pit for mine enemies and am fallen into it myself. It seemed to me as I laid hold of that old splintery banister and got set to climb back up all those stairs, always assuming they'd hold me a second time, of course, that it had finally happened. And that I'd always known it would. It just took me a while longer to fall into mine than it took Joe to fall into his. Vera had a pit to fall into, too. And if I've got anything to be grateful for, it's that I haven't had to dream my children back to life like she did. Although sometimes when I'm talking to Selena on the phone and hear her slur her words, I wonder if there's any escape for any of us from the pain and the sorrow of our lives. I couldn't fool her, Andy. Shame on me. Still, I'll take what I can and grit my teeth so it looks like a grin, just as I always have. I try to keep in mind that two of my three children live still, that they are successful beyond what anyone on Little Tall would have expected when they were babies, and successful beyond what they maybe could have been if their no-good of a father hadn't had himself an accident on the afternoon of July 20th, 1963. Life ain't an either-or proposition, you see. And if I ever forget to be thankful my girl and one of my boys lived while Vera's boy and girl died, I'll have to explain the sin of ingratitude when I get before the throne of the Almighty. I don't want to do that. I got enough on my conscience, and probably on my soul, too, already. But listen to me, all three of you, and hear this if you don't hear nothing else. Everything I did for love, the love a natural mother feels for her children. That's the strongest love there is in the world, and it's the deadliest. There's no bitch on earth like a mother frightened for her kids. I thought of my dream as I reached the top of the steps again and stood on the landing just inside that guard rope, looking out to the sea. The dream of how Vera kept handing me plates and I kept dropping them. I thought of the sound the rock made when it struck him in the face and how the two sounds were the same sound. But mostly I thought about Vera and me, two bitches living on a little chunk of rock off the main coast, living together most of the time in the last years. I thought about how them two bitches slept together when the older one was scared, and how they passed the years in that big house, two bitches who ended up spending most of their time bitching at each other. I thought of how she'd fool me, and how I'd go and fool her right back, and how happy each of us was when we won a round. I thought about how she was when the dust bunnies ganged up on her, how she'd scream and how she trembled like an animal that's been backed into a corner by a bigger creature that means to tear it to pieces. I remember how I'd climb into the bed with her and put my arms around her and feel her trembling that way, like a delicate glass that someone's tapped with the handle of a knife. I'd feel her tears on my neck, and I'd brush her thin, dry hair and say, "Shh, dear, shh. Those pesky dust bunnies are all gone. You're safe, safe with me." But if I found out anything, Andy, it's that they ain't never gone, not really. You think you're shut of them, that you dusted them all away and there ain't a dust bunny any place, and then they come back. They look like faces. They always look like faces. And the faces they look like are always the ones you never wanted to see again, awake or in your dreams. I thought of her laying there on the stairs, too, and saying she was tired, she wanted to be done. And as I stood there on that rickety landing in my wet galoshes, I knew well enough why I'd chosen to be on those stairs that are so rotted not even the hellions will play on 'em after school lets out, or on the days when they play hooky. I was tired, too. I've lived my life as best I could by my own lights. I never shirked a job nor cried off from the things I had to do, even when those things were terrible. Vera was right when she said that sometimes a woman has to be a bitch to survive. But being a bitch is hard work. I'll tell the world it is. And I was so tired. I wanted to have done. And it occurred to me that it wasn't too late to go back down those stairs, and that I didn't have to stop at the bottom this time neither, not if I didn't want to. Then I heard her again, Vera. I heard her like I did that night beside the well. Not just in my head, but my ear. It was a lot spookier this time, I can tell you. Back in 63, she'd at least been alive. "What can you be thinking about, Dolores?" she asked in that haughty kiss-my-back-cheeks voice of hers. "I paid a higher price than you did. I paid a higher price than anyone will ever know. But I lived with the bargain I made just the same. I did more than that. When the dust bunnies and the dreams of what could have been were all I had left, I took the dreams and made them my own. The dust bunnies? Well, they might have gotten me in the end, but I lived with them for a lot of years before they did. Now, you've got a bunch of your own to deal with, but if you've lost the guts you had on the day when you told me that firing the Jolanda girl was a boogery thing to do, go on. Go on and jump. Because without your guts, Dolores Claiborne, you're just another stupid old woman." I drew back and looked around, but there was only East Head, dark and wet with that spray that travels in the air on windy days. There wasn't a soul in sight. I stood there a while longer, looking at the way the clouds ran across the sky. I like to watch them. They're so high and free and silent as they go their courses up there. And then I turned away and started back home. I had to stop and rest two or three times on the way because that long time sitting in the damp air at the bottom of the steps put an awful misery in my back. But I made it. When I got back to the house, I took three aspirin, got into my car, and drove straight here. And that's it. Nancy, I see you've piled up pretty near a dozen of those little tiny tapes, and your cunning little recorder must be just about wore out. So am I. But I came here to have my say, and I've had it. Every goddamn word of it, and every word is true. You do what you need to do to me, Andy. I've done my part, and I feel at peace with myself. That's all that matters, I guess. That, and knowing exactly who you are. I know who I am. Dolores Claiborne, 2 months shy of my 66th birthday, registered Democrat, lifelong resident of Little Tall Island. I guess I want to say two more things, Nancy, before you hit the stop button on that rig of yours. In the end, it's the bitches of the world who abide. And as for the dust bunnies, frig ya. Scrapbook. From the Ellsworth American, November 6th, 1992. Page 1. Island Woman Cleared. Dolores Claiborne of Little Tall Island, longtime companion of Mrs. Vera Donovan, also of Little Tall, was absolved of any blame in the death of Mrs. Donovan at a special coroner's inquest held in Machias yesterday. The purpose of the inquest was to determine if Mrs. Donovan had suffered wrongful death, meaning death as the result of neglect or criminal act. Speculation concerning Miss Claiborne's role in the death of her employer was fueled by the fact that Mrs. Donovan, who was reputedly senile at the time of her death, left her companion and housekeeper the bulk of her estate. Some sources estimate the worth of the estate to be in excess of $10 million. From the Boston Globe, November 20th, 1992, page 1. A happy Thanksgiving in Somerville. Anonymous benefactor gives $30 million to orphanage. The stunned directors of the New England Home for Little Wanderers announced at a hastily called press conference late this afternoon that Christmas is coming a little early for the 150-year-old orphanage this year, thanks to a $30 million bequest from an anonymous donor. We received word of this amazing donation from Alan Greenbush, a reputable New York attorney and certified public accountant, said a visibly flustered Brandon Jager, head of the NEHLW's board of directors. It appears to be completely on the level, but the person behind this contribution, the guardian angel behind it, I should perhaps say, is completely serious about his or her anonymity. It almost goes without saying that all of us associated with the home are overjoyed. If the multi-million dollar donation proves out, the Little Wanderer's windfall would be the largest single charitable contribution to a single Massachusetts institution. From the Weekly Tide, December 14th, 1992, page 16. Notes from Little Tall by Nosy Nettie. Mrs. Lottie McCandless won the Christmas coverall at Friday Night Beano in Jonesport last week. The prize totaled $240, and that's a lot of Christmas presents. Nosy Nettie is so jealous. Seriously, congratulations, Lottie. John Karen's brother, Philo, came down from Derry to help John caulk his boat, the Deep Star, while it was at dry dock. There is nothing like a little brotherly love in this blessed season, is there, boys? Jolene Aubuchon, who lives with her granddaughter Patricia, finished a 2,000-piece jigsaw puzzle of Mount St. Helens last Thursday. Jolene says that she's going to celebrate her 90th birthday next year by doing a 5,000-piece puzzle of the Sistine Chapel. Hurrah, Jolene! Nosy netty and all at the tide, like your style. Dolores Claiborne will be shopping for one extra this week. She knew her son Joe, Mr. Democrat, was coming home from his toils in Augusta for an island Christmas, but now she says that her daughter, famous magazine scribe Selena St. George, will be making her first visit in over 20 years. Dolores says she feels very blessed. When Nosy asked if they would be discussing Selena's latest think piece in the Atlantic Monthly, Dolores would only smile and say, "We'll find lots to talk about, I'm sure." From the early recovery department, Nosy hears that Vincent Bragg, who broke his arm playing football last night.
Dolores Claiborne was written by Stephen King and read by Frances Sternhagen. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.